Now may the words of my lips and the thoughts in all our minds be acceptable to you, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. At the Mount of the Beatitudes, a place remembered for Jesus teaching the Sermon on the Mount, there is a fine octagonal church pictured there and a beautiful, peaceful garden with views out over Lake Galilee. Again, you can see on screen. Within the garden are set stones inscribed with the words of each of Jesus' Beatitudes in English, his eight statements of blessing. When we come to the third blessing of the meek, the promise is not the familiar, for they shall inherit the earth, but they shall inherit the land. Land and earth, of course, can mean exactly the same thing, but in a place where land ownership is hotly contested and people see themselves as being under occupation, which was true in Jesus' day and is true today, it changes it from a kind of a pious hope into a political creed. It's saying that the right to land, in the end, is not determined by force of arms, not who's got the biggest army, but land comes as an inheritance to the powerless. Whilst in the Holy Land, I've had the privilege of hearing Palestinian Christian scholars explaining how they view the issue of land and how they understand this term, promised land. Because from their perspective, promised land is actually quite difficult. Their own family inheritance has often been seized, or at least been put under their rights challenged, on the basis of the claim that in the Old Testament it was given to someone else, which is an awful long time ago. What's particularly galling for them is that many Western Christians accept without question the idea that the modern state of Israel is a direct successor of the biblical kingdom, even though Zionism began as a very secular movement. And therefore that legitimacy afforded by God's promises in Genesis can actually be taken directly and say that person should have that land today and the people on it should be cleared off. That it can be applied, in other words, in the modern world. Now, obviously, this is a huge and hotly contested subject, and I'm only touching on it today for one aspect, really, to use this Palestinian reflection on holy land to inform our understanding of how we should treat the earth, which is our shared inheritance today. And incidentally, I suspect that most Jewish rabbis would follow the same sort of themes in what I'm actually going to take from it. So in Genesis chapter 12, this morning's first reading, God first promises land to Abraham, or Abram, as is in the early part of the story, later changed his name to Abraham, but which either way is the forefather of the Jewish people. And I think there are four relevant points to make in connection with this. The first is most basic, that land is a gift. It says, to your offspring I will give this land. It's not to be claimed by right. It's not going to be purchased. And there's no talk of conquest at this stage. That will come later. The land of Canaan is simply promised. Second, Abraham's first action was to build an altar and to worship God. In worship, you acknowledge you are dependent on God. You're basically saying, thank you for your gift to us. The covenant between God and Abraham is through this action, God's promise, response in worship. It's established because covenant is both about relationship and about contract. It's a mutual kind of binding together as you make promises to each other. So you come into a covenant. Third thing, that this covenant then extends outwards. It's not just between these immediate people, but it's got effects much wider. Abraham and his descendants are to be a blessing to others. Indeed, all peoples on earth are to be blessed through him. That's why land is given, to bless others. And fourth, this will be worked out later on through the law once they're in occupation of the land. And detailed instructions are given about protecting the foreigner who dwells there. For the promised land is to be a place where you deal fairly with one another. Right, that's the Mount of Olives, by the way. The right one's come up. A place where you deal fairly with one another, where you care for the excluded and the marginalized, where you give people proper rest for all their work. And that actually applies to animals as well as to people, that you don't work them into the ground. And where the ground itself is not exploited to the point where it's drained of all its goodness. Rest, fallow times are put within the system. So in other words, the land is not promised for your exclusive exploitation. The land is holy because it is God's, and God gives it to be a blessing for all. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it, says Psalm 24. The vision of promised holy land extends outwards to cover the whole world. It belongs to God, all of it. And God is gracious and gives us opportunity to enjoy it and privilege of caring for it. Unfortunately, our human agendas have been more about competing for the best bits of this land and trying to squeeze its resources dry. We fight over it. Now, armies, it's a horrendous phrase. The more I think about it, armies are said to adopt scorched earth policies. It's a form of sacrilege, really, to destroy the land so that your enemy can't have any resources out of it. And then, if we've got it, we defend it, whether it's with big walls or whether it's defense systems. The message is, that's mine, keep your hands off. Or else, well, and then when we've done so, perhaps, we cover the earth with tarmac and concrete so that the refreshing rain turns into destructive floods. We destroy forests and ancient woodlands just to make money, taking no account for the impact on either local ecosystems or the planet's atmosphere. We poison the earth with insecticides that wash then into streams and rivers and poison the water too. In the communion liturgy we use at this service, human beings are described as the crown of all creation. And it should be that. That's what we're called to. But I must admit, I'm finding it increasingly hard to say that as I've been thinking more about these environmental issues. Because it seems to me we're more like the disgrace of all creation. Who may ascend the hill of the Lord, asked the psalmist, and answered, those who have clean hands and pure hearts. I think our hands are dirty, stained with pollutants, and our hearts impure with the lust for more. So what's the answer? Well, environmental problems have to be faced at all levels, national and supranational, as well as personal and local. They involve technology, economics, and politics. But it's got to begin with our own willpower, our own recognition of the problem, and that we're part of it. It's got to begin with a full and proper respect for the world that we've been given. So those are big things, and more than we can perhaps take in, but we've got to support what can be done. However, we've made a point in this creation tide to seek out one thing that, or a few practical things. I have one thing for today. Well, it starts with a picture, if you like, so there, of getting your hands dirty in a proper way, with the earth, soiled with actual soil. And in doing that, the best thing to do is to plant trees. Reading Clive Anderson of the Woodland Trust, he points out that the cleverest bit of kit to solve climate change already exists. It's called a tree. And he goes on, though to make a difference, we need an awful lot of them, 1.5 billion, if we're to help the UK reach net zero carbon by 2050. Just while we're touching on UK, people sometimes ask why we always have to be the ones who have to deal with climate change. Assuming by that we, that us, they're thinking of Great Britain, we do have to acknowledge that we were the first people to pollute the earth on an industrial scale. So surely we should be the first to clear it up. But actually, while the UK is ahead on some things, other countries often take the lead. And on the issue of tree planting, it was reported in the press that in Ethiopia, one of the world's poorer countries, on one day in July this year, they planted 224 million trees. And that's part of a program of planting 4 billion between May and October this year. That sounds like a commitment to me. So for this week's action point, as I say, plant a tree. If you've got somewhere to do so, if it's practically possible, enough space and so on, do it yourself. But if not, sponsor one somewhere else. The Woodland Trust have lots of helpful information and suggestions about how you might do that. Or, to link back to the first part of what I was saying, to almost deal with two things at once, if you like, you might want to support a struggling Palestinian family in the Holy Land. Then why not pay for planting an olive tree for them? Olives make a huge difference, and they're part of the culture as well as their economics. Embrace the Middle East is the organisation through which you can do that. Most of us are blessed with security in our homes, a place to live, a bit of land that it's on, whether we own it or rent it or however we hold it. But we're pretty secure with that, and that is something to be very thankful for. Because actually, and we're relatively secure, at least in this country. It's a gift of God to us. If you like, our bit of promised land. So let us make sure we use that for good, to treat it as holy, to be a blessing to others, that in the end, all the peoples of the earth may be blessed. Amen.